What's going on, guys? Holy shit, it has been a minute. I know I'm behind the eight ball on this one, but a lot of shit has gone down, right? Been quite a few life changes. Some things just have really sparked some new stuff in life, so kind of a cool opportunity to talk about it and let you guys know what's going down. So the last episode was episode number 94. This is episode 95. Holy shit, five away from 100. You didn't think I was gonna give up with the show before we hit 100 episodes, did you? So I don't have a whole hell of a lot of beer content for for this particular episode, but you know, I definitely wanted to jump on and let you guys know like some things that have been going on in my life, and it's been blessings and frustrations at the same time. So it's a really hard some really hard stuff and some really great stuff, right? So for instance, I'm actually starting a new position with a company called Weight Nutrition in February as a chief operating officer. The gentleman that owns the company, his name is Aaron Nash. He is a badass, just a hardcore entrepreneur that, you know, take no prisoners, no nonsense, get shit done kind of person, just like I am. And that really, really resonates well with me. We're both patriots and, you know, care tremendously about this country. And everything is made in the USA when it comes to the brand, which is friggin' phenomenal. Like, I'm just, it's one of the things that that really drew me to the company. Aaron also owns a franchise of gyms called Platinum Fitness, PFIT, and in the next year they have quite a few gyms opening, so he really wanted time to be able to pull away from the supplement company because he's been basically handling all the day-to-day operations and focus more on the gym side of things. And then he does have another non-profit, not-for-profit organization that he heads up called Kids Lives Matter, which is an amazing organization that is geared towards, you know, stopping child trafficking, child abuse, you know, like just, you know, an advocacy for children far beyond what, you know, most organizations typically do. And it's just an honor and a privilege to be associated with this gentleman and to be becoming a part of this brand. And I'm super excited. You know, it is going to come with its challenges. It is in Fort Myers, and he wants me in the office, and I will be there, right? So it's a 2-hour commute each way. So thankfully we have worked out a deal primarily for now that would allow me to be kind of a hybrid. You know, in days that I don't need to be there, I can work from home. And but primarily, you know, I will be spending a lot of time there and a lot more time on the road, which is going to be, you know, a big change for me considering I've been working from home for the last 3 years. It's going to be a big change for my kids. And one of the biggest reasons that it's going to be a big change for me when it comes to my children, especially, is that on January 3rd, my youngest daughter woke up to go back to school just like every other day. And it was the first day back after Christmas break. And she had a seizure. And she collapsed in the bathroom. And my oldest daughter found her. And we had to, you know, call an ambulance and get her, you know, taken to the hospital because she, you know, a seizure is a seizure. And we've been through this before. And having been a youth director for a long time, I've, you know, been around and know exactly what to do in the event of a seizure. But she wasn't cognitive post-seizure, and that was really the biggest, you know, fear for us, was, you know, wondering if it was more than what we thought it was. So we had to call rescue, and they came and got her. And thank God, as she was being loaded into the ambulance, she kind of came to and realized what was going on and saw me, and I gave her a kiss and told her everything was going to be okay. And the EMT asked her, you know, do you know who that is? And she said, yeah, Dad. So from that point, we knew thankfully, that she was okay. She went to the hospital. They weren't really able to determine anything. They set us up with a neurologist that, sadly, you know, they couldn't even get us in until January 31st. And at the time, and you know, for those of you, I use this as a little bit of a quick segue to those of you out there that are preaching, you know, socialized medicine and this and that and blah, blah, blah. We have private health care in the United States right now, and most people are waiting 30 to 45 days to be seen for serious illnesses and problems, including cancer, neurology, you know, just intense issues that should be seen in a relatively quick manner of time. Can you imagine if the United States was socialized medicine, those wait times would be three times that. So we wouldn't have been able to get my daughter in to see a neurologist probably for 3 to 6 months. So, you know, you really need to consider and think long term about the effects of your ridiculous thought processes and desires that you want, because you believe everybody is entitled to free healthcare. So, long story short, last Thursday, she ended up having another seizure, and after about 10 days of being seizure-free, and we took her back to the hospital. They did a CAT scan. The first time, all they really did was an EKG and some blood work, and everything came back good. The second time, they did a CAT scan, and they determined that everything was clear. There was nothing that came up on the CAT scan or anything like that. No masses, no tumors, you know, nothing that they could see. But the good thing about that is that having gone back to the hospital the second time, we were able to get the neurology visit fast-tracked. And we had there was a cancellation. So they were able to get us in last Friday, or last Thursday. Yes, because it was the Thursday before last. No, it was last Thursday. They were able to get us in Friday morning, sorry. So Friday morning, she took her to the neurologist. You know, again, really just a consultation at this point. Nothing was done. They took a lot of notes. They planned the appropriate procedure, which the next step is an EEG, which is basically a echo of the brain. And they monitor her brain waves and see exactly what's going on. So she goes in for the EEG tomorrow at 12:30 p.m. And it's a 4-hour procedure, and obviously it's iffy because in that 4-hour period of time, they really want to mimic the scenario in which she's having these seizures, and they've been happening when she wakes up. So she sleeps all night, she wakes up in the morning, and her body goes into convulsions and she starts seizing. And this has happened 3 or 4 more times since that Thursday when it happened to her. And they're involuntary. Her eyes roll back in her head. There's nothing that she can do. She can't stop them. We just have to wait them out. And so, you know, we're waiting on that. Tomorrow is the day for the EEG. But to get a anxious, you know, freaked out 12-year-old to fall asleep and wake up in the middle of the day is going to be extremely difficult. So I don't know how they're going to handle that, but I really hope that she, you know, that we're able to get the results that we're looking for so we can figure out what's going on. Because, you know, my wife is scheduled to go to Vegas this weekend for her best friend's bachelorette party. And she, you know, doesn't want to go because she's worried about her baby. And rightfully so, right? I mean, it's not something that any parent wants to deal with. And no parent especially wants to leave their child in what they would consider to be, you know, a state of need or in a bad situation like that. So it's going to be tough. You know, if we don't have any answers by, you know, the EEG, I'm sure my wife is probably going to pull out of the trip and stay home with her, which I completely understand and support, you know, 1,000,000%. And, you know, it's going to be hard. And it's been really tough, you know, for us. And, you know, it was, the initial seizure was probably the most traumatizing for everybody. And, you know, when I say traumatizing, I want you guys to understand. I mean, yeah, it's not, you know, we're not talking about, you know, being bombed in Afghanistan or anything like that. We're talking about, you know, your child collapsing on the floor. And in an instant, the first thing that goes through your head is that you've lost your child, that your child is dead. And to just kind of give you an idea of that morning. So I wake up, every school morning for them between 6 and 6:30. And I go and I wake up my middle daughter, who just turned 15. And she is in high school, so she has to be in school earlier than the little one. So I wake her up, and she starts getting ready for school. And then right around 7, 7:15, I wake up the little one. But what had happened is it was only probably, I want to say, 6:45 maybe? Like, the little one definitely woke up early, and she was kind of moving about. And what I typically do is I wake up, I go, and we have a great room, and in the great room we have two big armchairs, and I have a seat in one of the armchairs, and I just kind of doze off, and I come kind of in and out of sleep, you know, while they're getting ready for school. And all of a sudden we heard like a thud, you know, it kind of just sounded like somebody closing the door hard, and we didn't really know, you know, what was going on. We kind of just were like, hey, is everybody okay? And nobody responded, and my wife kind of heard it and said the same thing from bed. You know, she was still asleep in bed, and she was like, what was that, babe? And I'm like, I don't know. I was like, hey, is everybody all right? And everybody was, and nobody really responded. And I just assumed, you know, one of them shut the bathroom door hard or whatever it was. It didn't sound like anything crazy. It didn't sound like a slam. It didn't sound like a body hitting the floor. You know, it was nothing like that. And so, long story short, what I felt like was, you know, an hour, because I was sleeping, my oldest comes running down the hallway and literally is like screaming my name, and blood curdling screams. And I mean, I've woken up multiple times since then and had that sound in my head, you know, like just the sound of my daughter screaming bloody murder, dad, come on, come quick, come now. And I can't even do it. It was quite honestly probably the most terrifying thing I ever heard. And immediately I thought something was wrong with her puppy, right? She has a 3-year-old Yorkie named Dallas. And I immediately thought that was what was going on. You know, I was like, something's going on with the dog. And I jumped out of the chair, and somehow my wife, you know, Supermom, we literally call her that, I've called her that for years, somehow managed to make it out of the bed quicker than me and make it to my daughter first. And that's when I realized that it wasn't the dog, it was my daughter. And immediately I went into survival mode, right? Like, dad, 911, you know, is she breathing? Is she this? Is she that? You know, mom's talking to her. Mom's like, you know, working her through the seizure. And, you know, we get EMTs there and we get it squared away and get it taken care of. And it was that scenario, you know, I'll never forget my daughter calling for me. You know, I mean, the terror in her voice. It was hard. You know, as a father, like, you never want to see your children in pain. You never want to see your children hurting. As a parent, not just a father, but, you know, and when you can't do anything about it, I mean, God, that's probably the hardest thing in the world, because, you know, as parents, I mean, we want to protect our kids, right? We want to take care of them. We want to make sure they're good. And in this, you know, scenario, I was completely helpless. You know, there was nothing I could do other than follow the 911 operator's instructions and, you know, do what we knew we needed to do. And so, you know, and that preceded all this process, you know, and now, you know, I'm in a position where, you know, I have the opportunity of a lifetime to work with this company, and I'm super excited and happy, you know, to be coming on board with them. And in the same respect, I'm going to be traveling. I'm not going to be home. I'm not going to be here. And, you know, same as my wife, you know, going to Vegas, it's killing me, because I'm like, I need to know what's going on with her before I start traveling for work, right? I mean, I had to go away for Gaspari last Saturday to Tampa, and I was gone for just the day. I drove up 4 hours in the morning, did an event, and drove 4 hours home. And the whole time I was there, I was just worried about her, you know. And as a parent, I mean, that's pretty typical. You know, I mean, that's what we go through. That's what we do. And I just, I don't know how I'm going to be able to handle this whole scenario if, you know, we don't have answers, you know, by the time she, by the time I am supposed to start working at this new company, you know what I mean? And that's just frustrating and difficult for me. But in the same respect, you know, I mean, life goes on. And, you know, and if I, worst case scenario, if I have to prolong, you know, starting with the company or whatnot, I mean, then I'll do what I have to do. But it's definitely been, you know, tough. But obviously we've had some good things, you know, throughout the scenario. And we've had a lot of people ask, you know, oh, does she have COVID, like this and that? Because apparently there's an article going around now that states that, you know, children around her age that are developing, you know, COVID are now presenting with seizure symptoms, with seizures as a symptom. And as far as we know, she's never had COVID. She definitely hasn't had COVID recently. And I don't think that that has anything to do with it, because unfortunately we do have a history of seizures in my wife's family. My wife actually had a seizure when she was 15, and exactly this, you know, almost exactly the same scenario as Morgan. And they did the EEG for her, and they determined that she had a brainwave that wasn't connecting, and that's what caused the seizure. And they deemed it the cause, basically, of being lack of sleep. So, and she had gone to hang out at a, or spend the night at a girlfriend's house prior to her her quince, her 15s, and they didn't sleep much that night, right? They were pretty much up for 24 hours, and, you know, they were all excited about the event, hanging out, having a sleepover, you know, slumber party kind of deal, and she ended up having a seizure. And they put her on medication. She took medication for 3 years. She never had another seizure, and she's been perfectly fine ever since. My brother-in-law, similar scenario. You know, he had some seizures as a baby that they determined, you know, were, they call them, shoot, I can't remember the name of it. It's not a grand mal seizure. It's like a petit mal seizure, right? So, and his, he wouldn't even lose consciousness. He would just kind of get a blank stare and stare off into space for a little while. No convulsions, no nothing. I mean, there was actually a time when they were getting out of the car and they were walking into a building, and he just started walking off in the wrong direction. And they were calling his name and he didn't hear him. And that was technically one of those seizures. Similar scenario. He had a few. I couldn't tell you how many exactly, but he had a few. And they finally put him on a medication that worked. And for 2.5 years, he took the medication. And then he never had another seizure. And he's been perfectly fine seizure-wise ever since. So, I really believe that, you know, unfortunately, that this is probably a genetic issue that has something to do with, you know, my wife's side. And, you know, hopefully we're able to figure it out and it's nothing too serious. And worst case scenario, she has to be on, you know, medication for a while and things finally subside and, you know, we're able to move through this. So, definitely tough. But, you know, moving on from that. And I don't want to make any excuses whatsoever, but I had decided that I was going to start phase one of 75 Hard in January, and I was going to do it from the 2nd to the 31st. It's a 30-day cycle for phase one. And unfortunately, the day that my daughter had the first seizure, that Thursday, not the day that she had the initial seizure, but when she had the second seizure, it was actually post the gym takeover that we did. She fell asleep at my mother-in-law's house, who she was staying with, for about 15 minutes, and then got woken up abruptly. Excuse me, and that's when she had the second seizure. And that day, I didn't complete my task, and I actually failed phase one of 75 Hard. So, I was really frustrated, but I have stayed the task. Like, even though I failed, I have, because I didn't, when I say I failed, I didn't fail, I didn't drink alcohol, I didn't go off my diet, I didn't miss a workout, I didn't do anything like that. I simply forgot to take a progress picture, and I forgot to, and I did not complete all my 8 critical tasks for the day. But I failed, regardless. Doesn't matter what it was, doesn't matter how minuscule it was, I failed. but I've chosen to stay the course and ride out the 30 days just like I had planned to prior to my birthday. And then I will, you know, repeat phase one, you know, again here in the future, hopefully sometime soon, and get it taken care of the right way this time. So no excuses. I failed. I fucked up. And I didn't have to. You know, I can honestly say that I probably had a more difficult situation when I was hospitalized for my back during 75 hard, and I still managed to finish the day and to stay on task than this. So I should have been able to finish and come through, and I didn't. So I failed myself. And, you know, a lot of people would say, oh, Luke, you know, it was extreme circumstances, that's your baby, you know. And yeah, I mean, I get where you're coming from, and I appreciate, you know, the pat on the back. But at the end of the day, I'm still disappointed in myself for failing, especially with what it was. It would be totally different if I, you know, timing ran out and I wasn't able to finish my second workout or something like that. But I mean, we're talking about, I forgot to take a fucking picture and I missed 2 of my 8 critical tasks. I mean, that to me is just nonsense. I never should have missed that. Even if I had to do them at 12:30 at night, because I have until 1 a.m. to complete my day, I should have, and I didn't. So frustrated. But in the same respect, it is what it is. So keep moving, keep working. And like I said, I'm staying on task, even though I will not literally complete phase one of 75 hard. I'm staying on it, and I'm going to keep doing it. I'm already down another 9 pounds, and I'm feeling really good. And, on the way to being in the best shape of my life. And that's what this whole thing was all about. So I'm excited. I feel really good. You know, I feel healthy. I feel strong. And I'm just going to keep kicking and keep doing what I'm doing. So, but I wanted to, you know, kind of touch a little bit, too, on the whole aspect of beer, right? I mean, I haven't given up my love for beer, right? I still enjoy craft beer. I still enjoy, you know, breweries. And one of the, you know, my wife got me a pub pass for Florida, you know, so obviously I'll be hitting up some breweries this year because I definitely want to complete that pub pass. And so I'll be having some fun with that. But I'm definitely going to be cutting back severely on the amount of beer that I drink on a normal, because it's just not necessary for me anymore, right? Like, I don't have a desire to be loaded. I don't have a desire to be, you know, I don't have a desire to drink anymore, you know, and it's just not, I don't know, you know, just it's not as important to me as it was in the past. And I think that, you know, in and of itself speaks volumes. You know, it's like I open the fridge now and there's no like, oh my God, I have to drink this beer. You know, and I used to have that feeling. I mean, that was something that was huge for me, especially during COVID. It was like, dude, this beer can't go bad. I got to drink it. Let's get it out of here. So that's when, you know, I packed on the pounds, because I was literally, you know, drinking beer because I felt like I had to, not because I really wanted to. And it just became a habit at the end of the day. And I don't really want that habit to take back over. You know, I've been doing really, really well in terms of, you know, health overall and weight loss. And it's been good for me, you know, overall as a person. And, you know, I'm excited to kind of see what the future holds and, you know, where things go from here. So I've actually, through my daughter too, I've actually started drinking Living Water. So a lot of you guys are not familiarized with like Kangen water or anything like that. It's, you know, essentially they deem it living water. Is, you know, supposedly, and I've read a lot about this, otherwise I wouldn't be doing it, all of our water is contaminated to some extent, whether it's chemically contaminated or it's environmentally contaminated. You know, that's the reason why boroughs, cities, you know, towns chlorinate and chemicalize their water is because of contamination, right? So they have to what comes out of your faucet has to be alkaline water, right? It has to be alkalized, and it has to be deemed healthy by the state. Now, how they get there, of course, there are parameters of different things that they're allowed to use and different things that they're not allowed to use, but it varies so much even by city. When you look at, like, for instance, we used to live in Pembroke Pines. Pembroke Pines uses 17 chemicals to alkalize their water and to cleanse and alkalize their water. Cleanse, sanitize, and alkalize. Now, we live in Miramar now. Miramar has 153 chemicals they use to cleanse, sanitize, and alkalize their water. Why so different? Well, obviously the water is worse in Miramar, so in order for them to get it to the acceptable level by the state, they have to add a ton of chemicals and all this shit to it, so whatever. But what an ionizer does, or what this Kangen water machine does, is it literally ionizes the water and removes all the chemicals, removes all the foreign contaminants, and then it leaves you with a truly hydrating water that will actually permeate your cell membranes and actually hydrate your body. Whereas chemical alkaline water does not do that. It does not permeate your cell walls, and it does not truly hydrate your body. Now, ultimately the testament to this will be long-term use and to see, you know, what kind of benefits I actually experience from it and things like that. And I've just started, you know, just the last couple of days. So I'll give you guys a rundown on that as time goes by. A lot of people think it's a gimmick. A lot of people think it's bullshit. You know, it is what it is. But, you know, it's something that my daughter really wanted to do. So we're going to give it a try and see how it goes. I mean, I don't think drinking cleaner water in any way, shape, or form is going to be bad for us. So, you know, we'll do our thing and we'll see how it rolls and, you know, just kind of go from there. So I'll keep you guys posted and updated on that. And, you know, there's so much stuff going on, and I just wanted to, you know, shout out my buddy Drew. So Drew Brew, Mr. Butler, Pretzel Pros himself, dude did 75 hard, kicked ass, lost about 40 pounds, looks fantastic. Back on the beer wagon, you know, killing it the last couple days, enjoying himself and hanging out with buddies and having a good time. And I'm really, really proud of him because, you know, he's just an awesome dude, and I don't, you know, want to see anything negative or bad happen to him. And, you know, he was dealing with some personal stuff, and this is, you know, was got real a change, I think, for him at the right time, and just did a fantastic job. So, dude, I'm so proud of you. And Mr. Mike, I will have your beer box out to you shortly. That's something that we've been joking around about because Mike, my buddy Mike Maldonado, sent me a box right after I finished 75 Hard. And I just haven't bought any beer, really. I have a good amount in the fridge now that I bought a few to send to him, but I didn't have enough to send a complete box. So finally there, and I just got to package this shit up and get it out to him. So, ladies and gents, this is episode 95 of Calling Out Craft Beer. I appreciate the hell out of you. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Follow me on social media, Calling Out Craft Beer on Instagram. And, yeah, see you next time. Later. Thank you.